All right, everybody, hold on. This is going to be the podcast of podcasts, the summa cum laude of all extraordinary exercises in podcast history. You are about to hear from the Ed Stetzer. And Kevin, I know that you told me that you could not go to sleep last night.
Wow.
Waiting for this interview.
I was restless. I mean, it's just about 30 minutes of sleep every couple minutes or so.
Piled high and deep today. Yes.
Well, speaking of Ed Stetzer, whom you just heard his voice, he just referred to his PhD degree, piled high and deep. And
that is so true.
Ed has two doctorate degrees, two master's degrees. He's written a dozen books, hundreds of articles. He's currently professor and dean at Wheaton College, serves executive director of the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center, planted churches, revitalized churches, pastored churches. But Ed and I have had the opportunity to work together twice, once at Southern Seminary and then once at Lifeway. And we spent 15 minutes of his valuable time just reminiscing a little bit in front of Amy and in front of Kevin. You're going to enjoy this. Ed's brilliant. There is just no way about around it. He is brilliant. He knows his stuff. And he's made an incredible difference for churches around the world. And I certainly see the difference that's been made in the North American church. Welcome, Ed Stetzer.
Well, it's good to be here. Good to be back, old friend. And thanks for having me on. This account is our third tour together, you know, Southern and Lifeway, and now on the podcast.
Oh, man. I'm so glad we got you here. We're going to, well, there's so many directions that we could go, but we really want to talk about this whole issue of outrage. And frankly, when we first scheduled you, you were not able to come because of the funeral of a friend and tragic death of a friend that you served with. And so we rescheduled you as soon as possible, but a lot has happened since then. And this is probably even more pertinent if it's possible to talk about this whole thing about outrage. So we've got, let's see, what is your age now, Ed?
53.
So we got this old guy, 65. We've got the not so old guy, 53. And Kevin, where are you on this?
I'm 37. I just appreciated that Ed called it out and just said old friend. So
yeah, wow. Listen, I got to choose your age, Kevin.
You know, Kevin's about to celebrate an anniversary with us, Ed. This is 1 year.
Wow. Good deal. And I'm just, when I heard you had Kevin, I'm like, wow, amazing. He's the man. So you guys got a great, to Brad Wagner, Amy, you guys got a great team and more. So excited to see what Church Answers is doing. Is it the Church Answers, the overarching organization?
It is. Tom Rainer died.
Yeah, I heard, but but everyone called you Thom Rainer anyway, so it's probably Church Answers. They're not calling you Chuck Answers, so that's good.
I've had so many introductions. I want to introduce you to my very close friend Thom Rainer.
Yeah, it is so funny because I literally have people say to me, "Yeah, we know Thom and I are close." I'm like, "Okay, yeah, you guys are like really close. If you call me Ted, that's how close we are." So.
All right. Well, Ed, we want to talk to you about a lot of things, but back in 2018, or was it 2018 is when you released the book, Christians in an Age of Outrage. Give us a little bit of background about that. Tell us.
Yeah, so for sure. So my publisher and I were sitting down talking about what I should write on. And they suggested, you know, it's 2000, you know, I think you may write books faster than I do. I don't know. We probably similarly, but it takes me about a year to write a book. And then it takes about a year to get it through the system. So it's in a bookstore, or, you know, marketing, whatever. So 2016, they say, "Hey, why don't you write a book on outreach?" And I said, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, everyone was outraged in 2016. You remember how crazy that was. It was the election year. And I said, I'm not sure people are still going to be outraged in 2018 when the book would come out. And boy, was I wrong. And were they right? It's, the outrage got turned up to 11 on the sound meters. And so, you know, part of what we wanted to write was, how do Christians not get caught up in unholy and unrighteous anger, but how do they, and there are things to be angry about. You know, you and I are both deeply concerned about issues, pro-life issues, and speaking up for the unborn, disappointing Supreme Court rulings just as we're recording this. You and I are both deeply concerned about that for our ministries together. We've interacted on it. So that's something to have a holy and righteous anger about. But too many Christians are being discipled by their cable news choices and spiritually shaped by their social media feed. And the end result is that it's not looking godly. Not, and this book isn't a book about social media. It actually encourages some fasting and stepping away from social media, because that's often the expression of our outrage. So we're actually doing now, and I'm real thankful for your interview, because we've released a video curriculum, Christians at Our Best, that people are getting at edstetzer.com, and we actually have a sale on it right now. And
we'll provide a link to that in the show notes.
Awesomeness, thank you. And people are using it in small group studies, because, you know, Saddleback asked me in October, you know, I guess it's kind of an evergreen topic, October of last year, which was about 12 years ago in COVID time, but what is that, like 6 months ago? They asked, my math is bad, 8 months ago, whatever. They asked for the month of October, and we made it kind of outrage month at Saddleback. I did two of the sermons. Rick Warren did one. Doug Fields did the third or the fourth. And we built a whole small group curriculum that their thousands of small groups use. And so now we're coming into an election year. So we think it's a good time for Christians to take the high road, the gospel road, the missional road, and to engage their neighbors, not as outraged online, you know, yellers and screamers, but as people are showing and sharing the love of Jesus.
Oh, I like that.
That's great. Well, and I love that you made the correlation between social media and people on their Facebook feeds and that kind of thing, which kind of leads to the second question is, describe what you're seeing in today's culture as it applies to outrage, and how can Christians help rather than contribute to the outrage? I mean, there's got to be a correlation between their phones and social media and all that kind of thing. And one way is to fast from that. Or do you have any other suggestions?
Yeah, I think we actually work through several of them in the book. And one of the reasons is that, you know, we don't have a discipleship of social media. And, you know, the iPhone, we think of social media as being around a real long, long time. But until the iPhone sort of merged and mainstreamed social media on the phone, you know, it's a little over 10 years ago. It's not that long. So, you know, I was back on in the day. I think I knew Tom Rainer on CompuServe's SBC page. That's where I met Rick Warren and others. And so we go way back on some of these. So social media, or at least online bulletin boards, were around. But what social media has done is it's created echo chambers. And people are willing to believe anything, the worst, about someone they don't like, and grow into a great sense of hate. And things just explode. I think we all probably know Caleb Kaltenbach. You know, he is a Christian leader. He's written a wonderful book called Messy Grace, about being raised by two moms and a same-sex, I'm not sure it was a marriage or a domestic partnership. And now he's an evangelical Christian pastor. And, you know, he's worked so hard to build bridges. And one day he's in a Costco in California. He takes a picture of a Bible that some probably $10 an hour clerk accidentally mislabeled in the fiction section. And he just tweets it, says, you know, something, this is funny. And next thing you know, it's on the front page of, you know, Costco calls Bible fiction. And, you know, the head of Costco at that time was a devout Catholic. And he said, we're not doing that. But the whole, you know, here's Caleb Kaltenbach. And he's the opening illustration of the book. Spends his life trying to build bridges with people who are different than him, and makes serious progress. And he tweets a joke about the fiction section of a Bible, and he now is on the front page of screaming social media, boycott Costco. And he's like, no, it was clearly just some kid mislabeled a Bible. So I think that Christians sort of on that trigger edge all the time just don't help. And, you know, and even in the 2016 election, we read a lot about this in the book. I got an email from Twitter saying I had been extensively interacted with by Russian bots during the 2016 election. And I was like, I don't remember interacting. Well, it turns out it goes either way. So they were just tweeting me all the time. There was these Russian bots. And here's why. You know what they targeted? I mean, everyone agrees this happened, right? This is not part of the debate about, you know, whether there was, you know, collusion was a big thing for a while. Everyone agrees, all the intelligence agencies agree, that Russian bots tried to influence people to the right and the left, and they primarily were successful with conservative Christians. And so that's why they interact with me a lot. So I would just say that we've got to be more discerning about what we believe and how we speak. And so, you know, part of that is fasting, as I mentioned, but also too, it's developing spiritual disciplines that that allow us to be more Christ-like and kingdom-oriented in our responses to all of life. Because if not, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but we're in trouble as a country right now. 2020 has not been our friend. I'm scared to death what's behind door name July, because so far June and May and April and March have not been fun
so
months.
True. So true.
So it's hard.
You talk about four ways to walk the better path. I'm not going to reread them, but well, I'll just summarize them. Empathy, humility, seeing people in the image, and being sacrificial. Can you give a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so one of the things too is that people who disagree with me, one of the things I've tried to learn is that I can try to understand them better. And I think to say, all right, why do they think that? Why, for example, I'm a conservative evangelical, not just an evangelical, but a conservative inerrantist evangelical. And so I have friends who recently had over to our house who are afraid of conservative evangelicals. And I want to say, why? Well, you want this and this and this. And I said, I don't want that. You know, I do want freedom to practice what we believe at our church. I want freedom to practice what we believe at Wheaton College, where I serve, the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center. And so just having that conversation with these, well, we're afraid that, you know, that if you were to have power, this would happen. I said, well, I can't say for all evangelicals, and we haven't always been the best witness. So just understanding where they came from was so helpful, trying to have the humility to do that. And that's not always so easy, particularly for people who are, I'm a really convinced Bible thumper. You know, I've been preaching verse by verse through the books of the Bible for the last 4 years at the Moody Church in downtown Chicago. We are not wishy-washy on our views about the authority of the Bible and how they are to be understood and lived out. But the humility might be in how I communicate them. It might be in how I engage with others. It might be on how I just walk in relationships with other people. And one of the things that I have just learned is that not everybody thinks like me, and it's okay that they might have a different decision. Now, part of my job is, there's different ways to look at this. There's a whole wing of kind of our world in the church, Tom and Kevin and Amy, our wing in the church that really wants to go to war with people. And I get that right now, that's kind of the thing that a lot of people talk about, but I'm convinced you can't war at a people and reach a people at the same time. Now, mind you, that doesn't mean there aren't things to stand up for. It doesn't mean there aren't things for us to make a difference on. But right now, I think, you know, in the book, I talk about empathy. The polar opposite of love is disgust. And that's what I know. A whole lot of people just feel disgust for people who differ with them, people who have different views of morality or sexuality, or people who have different views of politics and marginal taxation rates. It's just disgust for them. And I don't see Jesus filled with disgust, even when he spoke up and spoke out on things. You don't see that, but disgust, it actually causes us not to have to engage somebody, causes us not to have to think about somebody. So I think empathy being a key thing, there's ways to do that. Humility you mentioned already, but the Imago Dei is key. Every person made in the image of God, worthy of dignity and mm-hmm. respect. Even the person, you know, and you and I've seen, you know, you and I went to battle against foes in the past, Tom. And when we did so, we would see sometimes what people would say. And it's like, that's not at all what we would say. And if you present someone who disagrees with you, without in any way them looking at it saying, well, I can see they have a difference of opinion than we do, et cetera, but you basically just caricature and make up things, that's born from disgust. The Lord is not honored by positions and comments birthed from disgust. He's honored by things birthed from empathy, humility, seeing others made in the image of God, worthy of dignity and respect, and ultimately even sacrifice sometimes.
Well, it's good. It's good. It's
my really answers good. Are probably too long. I'm a bit of a preacher, so I'll be shorter.
It's really good. Kevin?
No, I think, you did a great job, by the way. You came to Emmanuel in December and did a great job of, you know, addressing our congregation. And
I think you were like the last church that I spoke to. No, I spoke at Wayne Cordero's Church in Hawaii, but the last two churches that I spoke to before the world shut down.
Well, actually, the last church you spoke to was Moody this last Sunday.
Well, that's true, but I mean, I was a regular guest. What I mean by is a guest speaker. Yeah, so once I came back, and I, you know, we met in video then. I was the first, you know, okay, let me show you guys if I can find it real quick. So the coolest thing ever they gave me, well, I took it to my work, but let me just tell you, just super fun. Tom's a collector of things. You go in Tom's office, like, let me show you this. So they gave me a plaque, which is cool. You'd almost expect a little plaque after 4 years. I was the interim for Moody Church for longer than three of their actual pastors were the pastor of Moody Church. So, and that's sort of fun. So I thought, maybe they'd give me a nice plaque and that would be nice. I shouldn't say it's expected, but you know, people give plaques. But here's what they did. They cut a piece off of it wasn't an active door, but the 100-year-old, century-old original doors, and they put the plaque on this thing they created made from the century-old doors of the Moody Church. So that was super cool. What a fun thing to be in interim. But yes, that was the last church I preached at. But I love memorabilia. Tom, you're a memorabilia guy.
Yeah, do you remember my piece of wood?
Your piece of wood? I don't. I remember the thing Rick Warren signed in your bathroom.
All right, hang on.
Okay. Okay, we got to tell him about the thing Rick Warren signed in your bathroom, unless that's going to offend a lot of football fans. Amy's shaking her head saying, don't tell them.
Can you read that?
Yeah, I do remember this. Yes, I do remember this. JFK says, JFK assassination, Dealey Plaza picket fence. So he acts as a piece, November 22nd, 1963. Tom Rainer does not believe that there was a lone gunman, and he has wood in his office from the Dealey Plaza, which I think technically you probably have violated a crime scene, but I guess you didn't take it in 1963.
No, I did not. I did not.
That's
cool. I was 8 years old in 1963, and actually they were trashing the fence. It was kind of
nice. No, I love that. He's, again, I don't know you guys. I mean, Amy knows this. He's a memorabilia collector, and I love that. I love that. So Moody Church. What were you saying, Kevin? I really interrupted.
No, it's great. No,
this was our meetings at the ELD when we were at LifeWay.
I thought you did a great job when you came in December, because you talked about the age of outrage in your sermon. You alluded to some things. You made some good illustrations. But I think what pastors want to know is, how can they help lead their members, right? I think you did a good job of leading the congregation at Emmanuel just a few months ago. You know, what are some good tips for pastors trying to lead their congregations down a better path?
Yeah, I think ultimately speaking up on some of these issues. You know, I've written a lot on conspiracy theories lately, because they've really taken hold in the Christian community. And I think I don't know that I need to go through and debunk every conspiracy theory, but what I need to say is I need to develop some people who are more responsible in how they engage the world around them. The Dallas Morning News asked me to write a 2,000 word article, very unusual, big, long article for them, for their front page of their opinion section. It was super cool. And I basically said, we're people of the truth. I got to speak up on things that are true and help people to make true and wise choices. So I think that becomes a key thing. I think ultimately teaching people, you know, culture war rhetoric. I just don't know one of the things that people who use that language would say, and I think rightfully so, that Christians didn't bring the culture war. The culture war was brought to them. But the question is, how will we respond? We could say, well, they started it. And I would tell my kids when they were six not to do that. And so how might we respond back? So for me, I want to build bridges with people who disagree with me. There are actually 52 examples in the book of Christians that have built bridges with people, in many cases seen come to Christ, people with whom they disagree. In the video curriculum series that I mentioned and the small group series, got small group books that go along with it, we do it about 15 more and use examples of that. I'm convinced that the answer to the quandary that we're in is not going to be political. It's not going to be solved from the White House. It's going to be impacted by the church house. I know I sound like a preacher now. Don't understand. I believe in getting involved in politically and more. My radio show, July 4th, airs on Saturday. My radio show is a Saturday show, is all about patriotism and more and how you make the country better. But I would say that the role of the people of God is to show and share the love of Jesus, to be ambassadors for the kingdom. Jesus is not coming back riding in Air Force One. He's not coming back riding on a donkey or an elephant. And I think that churches and Christians will do well when they see themselves primarily and first as citizens of the kingdom. And teaching that kind of idea, Subversive Kingdom was a book that when Tom was president of LifeWay, that LifeWay published. And I often say it was my favorite book that I wrote that my mom and I really enjoyed. So it didn't take off like I hope it would, but I poured my heart into it, because I think one of the things we got to be is stop trying to be overt and overthrowing. That's what the disciples thought Jesus was going to do. And he said, no, don't you ever even paying attention? It's not overt and overthrowing. It's really subversive. It mixes in, it changes. It's faithful presence, as James Davidson Hunter would write about in his book, To Change the World. So I think that, teaching Christians to live as ambassadors, their homes, and, you know, where their faith communities are pressing into action in workplaces and in schools. Those are like embassies. Our churches are like embassies of the kingdom of God. I think when we think differently, and that's the whole thing, even the video curriculum series, I'm trying to help people to think that way, because here's what we learned, you know, just in June, what we learned in June was that Supreme Court's not going to be the answers to all that ails us, right? We learned that politics is growing more divisive and more broken, And if the people of Gobble stand up and stand out, I think they'll make a difference.
Ed, you have written voluminously. You have spoken extensively. You've influenced greatly. What else is up in your life right now? We've been talking about Christians in Age of Outrage. We have the link to that in the show notes. We've talked about your new curriculum that is out. We have the link to that in the show notes. What else is up in your life? You just stepped down from 4 years at Moody. So where's, among your many paths, where are you headed right now?
Well, so I'm going to start preaching at a church in New York City. It's called Calvary Baptist Church. And I'll be doing at least a 6-week series with them. That's David Olford's old church. It's actually a skyscraper church, they call it. So it's kind of fascinating. But you know, I'm doing it from my basement. So we're not traveling right now. We're not gathering. New York City's still pretty much, and us, you know, we're not gathering at our churches. So I look forward to sharing there. I'm still a teaching pastor at High Point, which I serve here with Ron Zappia in the western suburb of Chicago. We got 5 or 6 locations. And I'm working on, you know, our grad school's been going great. You know, the last time we talked, you gave me advice, which I followed to the T, and have launched now 2 cohorts of students based on your very helpful advice and some of the things you did when you were dean. Tom had an arrangement when he was dean that's like my arrangement when I'm dean, is that there was two of us were in the dean's office, and Tom's been super helpful with advice. So we continue to grow our grad program. It's about 30 people when we started 4 years ago. We're passing, getting close to 400 now. So it's been exciting to see. And the book I'm pouring my heart into right now is Evangelicalism and Its Future. I'm really concerned that will we thrive? It seems that I was hoping 2 months ago that there would be a huge spiritual awakening that, and I still think that may come, that could come from this. What I'm seeing is a fast forward. Ross Douthat's column in the New York Times last week talked about how all of a sudden it's 2030 and all the social agenda has now jumped forward so rapidly that, some people are now talking about a recession in religion, where in the Wall Street Journal a month ago talked about, could this be the beginning of the Great Awakening? I think we're at a cusp. I don't know where that cusp goes. And I think who we are as followers of Jesus, as evangelicals, which includes everyone from Assemblies of God Pentecostals to PCA Presbyterians to Southern Baptists to a whole lot of non-denominational, who we are will impact what we do. And I think ultimately will in some ways shape what the future of faith looks like in the whole Western world. And so that's what I'm trying to, you know, and I've had to rewrite, because by the time the book comes out, it'll be after the election. And I think that's going to have significant impact. So I've got 2 versions of, depending on who's the next president. And then it's after the pandemic, maybe, I hope, because we don't know, but Dr. Fauci says he's cautiously optimistic about a vaccine by the end of the year. So I'm right. I don't have a second version when we're still in the pandemic. So, but boy, I mean, who would have thought?
Is that a 2021 release?
Yes, 2021.
Is that Tyndale?
Yeah, Tyndale. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. No, it's not. It's InterVarsity. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, the last one was Tyndale. What's that?
The previous one, Tyndale.
The previous one was Tyndale. Yes. Yeah, so Tyndale was Christians in the Age of Outrage, including the study guide from Tyndale. And then this next one's InterVarsity. So, and I wanted to do InterVarsity because I'm a conservative evangelical. They're more centrist, even progressive evangelical. And I'm trying to write a book that actually all evangelicals will find prophetic in some ways. It's not just written towards us. You know, we're more on the conservative evangelical side. But we both know that there are brothers and sisters who are evangelicals, who believe the gospel, who have some differences than us. And we are going to need each other. I think that evangelicals 10 years from now are going to look at each other as close brothers and sisters. Where right now we're like, well, we're more centrist, we're more conservative. As the culture has shifted to the left, we're all going to be on the margins of culture. And I said recently, somebody, Fuller Seminary is going to feel like Dallas Seminary in 10 years to the rest of the world. So, I mean, think about it. I mean, you can't, unless you get on the right side of history, the world's not going to affirm you. And as long as people choose not to be on the right side of history about, biblical ethics, we're going to be in this boat together, and we better learn how to do it together.
We have been talking to Ed Stetzer, and we are delighted to have him on this podcast. Please look at the show notes. Please look over the book that came out a couple of years ago, but still is, well, maybe even more relevant today than even when it was first released. Look at his curriculum that we have there. We always thank Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, our sponsor, to let you know we've got some new things coming with Southeastern. We'll be talking about those later. But you can see about Southeastern in your show notes, and you continue to look at the Church Future Indicator. That's a free download, and I think, again, it's still very helpful. We get a lot of people commenting on that. So just check that out. Ed, thank you. I want to have you back soon.
Thanks, brother. Anytime. Good to see you again.
Thank you again for joining us at Rainer on Leadership. Subscribe to iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app. Join us at churchanswers.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.